This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In this week's program, we learn why 2017 must be a year of decisions for Libyan national solidarity, and the importance of building a bridge with the African diaspora to end female genital mutilation, or FGM. But first, although the International Criminal Court, the ICC, is investigating cases involving African countries, this doesn't mean that it is targeting the continent. That's the opinion of the UN Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, Adama Dieng, addressing the announcement that some countries plan to pull out of the ICC, which tries individuals responsible for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. They're among 124 nations that are party to the Rome Statute, the 2002 treaty that established the court, and Mr. Dieng has written an op-ed explaining why withdrawing from the treaty undermines international justice for everyone. He spoke to Jerome Longuet about the need for dialogue between the ICC, countries, civil society, and victims of atrocities.
The adoption of the Rome Treaty, it was a consensus built on the strong desire of the peoples around the world to bring to an end impunity. And I should say that if the Rome Treaty has been come to life, that was first and foremost thanks to the support of African states. And five of the cases which are today under reinvestigation were brought by the African countries themselves. This doesn't mean that African leaders are being targeted.
So what can we do to change this perception?
What we need to do is to embark upon a very active and collective dialogue. And starting with the organs of the court, they should all together dialogue with the state parties, but also non-state parties. But they should also speak to the members of the civil society. They should engage a dialogue with the victims. Because at the end of the day, if this tribunal has been put in place, that is first and foremost for the victims.
You are also pleading for reform of the Rome Statute and also the implementation. So what do you mean?
There is not a single institution which is perfect. And therefore, it is simply important for the state parties to see where there are weaknesses. It is not by withdrawing from the court that you will solve the problem. That will never bring an end to impunity. What is required is to see where do we need to bring changes. I mean, even within the United Nations, we have been reforming. Even my own mandate was established as a result of the failure of the international community to prevent the genocide in Rwanda and in Srebrenica. And therefore, let's make sure that we have a strong international criminal court, but most important, let's start by also increasing the effectiveness of the national justice systems.
2017 must be a year of decisions where political deadlock in Libya is broken in order to restore basic services to the people. That's one of the key messages being delivered to the Security Council by the head of the UN support mission in Libya, UNSMIL, Martin Kobler. The UN brokered the signing of the Libyan Political Agreement, the LPA, in December 2015, which aimed to establish a single government of national accord after several years of fighting between rival factions. Mr. Kobler said views were converging between different political groups, but there needed to be a breakthrough this year with the unified support of the international community. Basma Bagal asked him if the 2015 agreement had led to any meaningful progress.
The LPA was very instrumental to get the country out of the civil war. 2016 was the year where the situation was consolidated. It is far from being satisfactory, but at least it is consolidated. There is low-level violence, and every civilian casualty and every violence is one too many. However, one cannot compare it to other countries in the region where there is really ballistic violence. This does not happen there. However, there is no state authority responsible, no kind of United Libyan army, no strong police force, which guarantees the security for the people.
You mentioned the neighboring countries. How effective are the efforts of neighboring countries to bring all parties to the conflict together?
I think it's absolutely necessary that everybody speaks with the same voice. The League of Arab States, the European Union, the African Union, and the United Nations. The neighboring countries in particular, they have a great interest that the dangers in Libya do not spill over to their territories. This is the danger of terrorism. This is the migration, in particular for the Europeans. So that's why it's important that they stand together and they develop a joint strategy on the basis of the Libyan political agreement. And I'm very pleased that in the last 2-3 months, there is really a growing consensus, both on the amendments of the Libyan political agreement, all neighboring states to enormous efforts in order to consolidate these positions, to invite parliamentarians, to invite important politicians to their countries in order to lobby with the same messages in order to have peace, security and prosperity in Libya.
Do you see any agreement among all Libyan parties in the near future?
I see very clearly a convergence of views, not an agreement. And there will be never a real consensus. There is also not a consensus in any of member states on important political developments. But to have a convergence of view, an inclusive process, this is important. And we spend our time together with our international partners to really transmit this message. Please now go back to deliver basic service to the people. And 2017 must be a year of decisions.
Encouraging the African diaspora to advocate for the rights of women and girls on the continent was among the goals of this year's commemoration of the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation, or FGM, observed annually on the 6th of February. Christina Silveira has been speaking to Nafissatou Diop, coordinator of a UN program to accelerate the abandonment of the practice, which is recognized as a human rights violation.
Female genital mutilation is some procedures that are done to transform the external genitalia of the girl or the woman. So that consists sometimes in cutting the clitoris, or sometimes cutting the labia minora, or sewing the labia majora in order to only let a small hole for urine and menstruation. We are talking about 200 million girls and women that went through the practice today in 30 countries where we do have data. So it means that there is a lot of countries without data, but who are practicing FGM.
What kind of efforts are being led by the UN to fight this practice?
What we are doing is really, of course, in terms of legislation, out of the 17 countries where we are working, we have 13 countries with a law, and we are supporting them to enforce the law. But we are also supporting the policy and helping the government to implement those policies, which has the education system. And the most important one is that we are supporting the collective process of abandonment of FGM.
Now, this year's theme for the day against FGM is building a solid and interactive bridge between Africa and the world to accelerate ending FGM by 2030. What does that mean exactly?
So I think that the team was trying to first say that FGM is beyond Africa, because today it has been documented that this is practiced in Indonesia, Colombia, other countries of Latin America, in Russia, Georgia, Jordan, India, Pakistan, Malaysia. And then, of course, because of all the migration, we have it spread over Western countries. The bridges is because Africa has a huge diaspora community, and they may be very influential in what is happening in Africa, because they're investing a lot of money to support the reduction of poverty. What we do think is that trying to make sure that, they are also recognizing that gender inequality is one of the big components that they need to address if they really want the development of their communities and the reduction of poverty. FGM and child marriage are part of it. They have to address it.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.